Today is Saturday, July 16th, 2011. My name is David Jackson from the Bay Area Radio Museum and Hall of Fame. And today we are at the California Historical Radio Society's KRE Studios. And joining us today is Ed Baxter. Ed, hi. Thanks.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for finally, after years and years of trying to do this. Very simple. We start these out with the most mundane thing. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Hollywood, California.
Really?
Yeah, I really was. I really was. Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital. Born for showbiz. Hey, you know what? Can I interrupt you for just a
Please
second?
Please do.
I don't know whether I could still queue up. I started as a disc
jockey. Hey, you want to try to... You want
to? Can I see if I can... Is there a way to queue up?
Hang on. Is there here, hang on a second.
I don't know whether I can. Yeah, I started at a...
Hang on a second.
I'm sorry. You're supposed to ask the questions, aren't you?
Yeah, but you people bail me out every time.
I know. Well, I started by being a disc jockey. I was the youngest disc jockey in Los Angeles on an FM station.
At what station?
At KRHM. It was Kay Ruth and Harry Mazelich, who were the owners of the Lakers at the time.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
This was early 60s, late 50s?
It was, you're dead. That's a personal question.
That was back in the late 70s,
I'm old,
right?
Yes, right, in the early
80s. I'm sorry.
No, it was,
They owned it just before Dr. Jerry Buss, so that was 90s.
That's exactly right. No, it was before. 67. It was. I started in radio in 67. And it was really cool because I didn't realize it when I went in there, but I was this huge Lakers fan. And you have Rudy La Russa, who played forward for the Lakers, Elgin Baylor. You have these guys selling time. They didn't make enough money during
playing basketball.
Like, they're not like the multimillionaires now, right? They didn't make enough money, so Ruth and Harry Mazelich, who brought the team from Minneapolis, had them in selling radio time.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember looking in the studio door and being here at KRE, actually, this is amazing for me because it reminds me a whole lot of the KRHM studios. We were in the Wilshire district of Los Angeles, and they're Klan family, near the Ambassador Hotel. And so, but we had really cool stuff. We did stuff. But anyway, Rudy La Russa, looking up, and Rudy La Russa, who was 6'8", 6'9", had to duck to get through, the doorway. So.
At that time, they had Elgin Baylor. They had Gail Goodrich at that time. They had, Wilt came a little bit later.
Wiley, Jerry West, Frank Selby, Rudy La Russa, Wiley, and Elgin Baylor were the starting lineup.
And they had them selling time.
Selling time. That
I wonder if Franklin Muley did this, because Franklin Muley owned a couple of FM stations before he had...
I'm kind of wondering if he
owned the Warriors at that time. Kind of funny if he'd have, because he had Wilt at that time.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was your induction into radio.
Yeah.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Grant High School in Van Nuys, California. Went to. By the time I got out of high school, basically I was working professionally. I got in at KRHM sweeping floors. My dad knew one of the disc jockeys, got me an introduction. I'd known that I wanted to do radio since I was about 11 years old.
Why?
Well, if I couldn't be a professional basketball player. So if we'd play in 2-on-2 in the backyard, and I would, if there was an extra guy, I would offer to get out, and I did play-by-play. I had my little reel-to-reel thing. I mean,
that might be an indication.
I was a real sap. My kids look at me and say, Dad, you're really lucky. You knew what you wanted to do. And I did. 11 years old, I knew I wanted to do it. By the time I was 18, I was on the air. I went to Cal State Northridge, they were very unhappy with me because I didn't spend enough time at the school radio station. I was working professionally.
Sure.
And I ended up working double shifts because one of the guys got pretty sick, and that's what happened. The way that I got on the air, I know you didn't ask this question. You want to ask the question?
Yes, I just did.
Okay.
How'd you get on the air?
Oh, David, I'm glad you asked that question. I was reading meters and doing homework for Cal State, and the guy who was on the air had actually Linda Ronstadt on the air. And she every other word was a four-letter word. But anyway, Skip had a bad burrito or something, Skip Weschner, and he ended up in the John. And I'm hearing one of Linda Ronstadt's records go, click, 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 click. And I hear him yell, Ed! And I go roaring out there from the back. He couldn't get out of the bathroom. I'm on the air with freaking Linda Ronstadt. And it was It was amazing. Wow. It was, yeah. Wow. I mean, that was it. Now, Linda Ronstadt was, it was before she was huge.
But still, she was on her way up. She was probably playing the whiskey with the guys and everything else at that time. That was probably the
L.A. was the gravy train. I never took payola, of course. But it was the gravy train because, I mean, Herb Alpert walks into the studio one day with these kids. He said, "We can't get a break. We can't get these kids played."
Oh,
Carpenters.
No. I figure it was Richard and Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm like 19 years old. Well, I don't know. I mean, you know.
So, wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool.
And this is at this little FM radio station.
FM station.
Wow.
Because I grew up listening to, anybody knows anything about radio or you know, stuff, KMPC.
Mm-hmm. Station of the Stars.
Yeah,
big
right.
Station
exactly.
Down there.
Sure. KFI. Mm-hmm. So Winning Hill, you know,
right.
Jeff Edwards, Gary Owens,
right.
Who did Laugh and
right.
Stuff, all that stuff. And on the Loman and Barkley were
of course,
on KFI.
Yeah.
I mean, those were, of course, they weren't as good as KSFO and
but
KMBR.
But were you
here,
more into that, the Winning Hill and Loman and Barkley and those guys more so than the KFWBs, the KRLA, the KHJ of that time? Were you?
Yeah, I was. I was into the so-called MOR, type stuff. They stopped doing interviews. So here I sit over this little FM station, and FM got no ratings at that time. There's nothing. And all of a sudden, these people who can't, they've got the record promoters, they can't do. So they're bringing through all these people, Jack Jones, the Carpenters. I'm sorry, I'm name dropping.
No.
It was, for this 19-year-old kid, it was incredible. They flew us to Vegas for shows. They flew us up here. My first brush with San Francisco radio, really, was they flew us up here to stay, put us at the Fairmont to see Jackie DeShannon.
Oh, nice. Wow.
What the world needs now is love. And here I am in San Francisco.
Wow.
And I met the program director of KNBR. And I actually was the assistant program director of KNBR in 1971 for 1 year.
Was that with Ron Fell at that time?
Ron Fell replaced me.
And
boy, did he replace me. He became program director.
Yeah,
really. We used to program, we used to program records on these little sticks. And how possibly basic can I get here?
Go for it.
Okay. We put sticks of paper that would have Burt Kempfert, on these things, and we'd stick them in and program the hours and put them in there. And Frank Dill was a morning guy. Mike Cleary was freelancing middays at that time. Yeah, he was a filling guy. So I decided to leave, and Ron Fell came in, and these sticks were just a pain, and the program director was kind of a pain, and he said, "What do I do with these things?" And I said, "You stick them in here." He said, "That's ridiculous." And I said, "I know. I'm leaving, Ron. Good luck. Have fun." And he says, "Hey, 6 months. Give me 6 months, and I'll make this guy stick them up his." And he did, and he became program director.
Go ahead. I'm not interrupting you.
Oh, I sat in on a meeting.
You say the answer, and I'll come up with the question. We'll put it in later. We'll fix it in post.
I'm sorry. I've had such a great career, David. I mean, and it starts back with that stuff, and I look at the ride all the way through KGO, and I am blessed. I mean, radio is such an amazing medium.
Were there other stops after Los Angeles before heading over? Where else did you work?
Okay, I started in Los Angeles, did 4 years there, came up here as assistant program director at KNBR. They wouldn't let me be on the air, which is what I liked, and be management at the same time. And my next stop was program director in Cleveland, and I really didn't want to do that. Yeah, that was going to be the youngest.
What station was that?
I forgot.
Did everybody
else NBC
forget?
We were NBC owned.
Oh, it was an
owned
and operated, like WTAM or something like that.
And they thought I was crazy. And I said, hey, kid, what's the matter with you? You know, you'd be the youngest program director in the chain. Why don't you want to do this? I didn't want to do it. I wanted to be on the air.
Sure.
So I left and went to WSB in Atlanta, which is
a little bitty station.
Yeah, a little bitty station.
Wow, welcome south, brother.
Yeah, and could never really connect with them, and I don't think they connected with me.
Wow.
It was really a very different different kind of atmosphere, and I did about a year and a half there, quit. It's really the only time in my career that I was without a job. I was without a job for a week. I'd have been sending out tapes and stuff, and I moved during that week and went to work in LA on the Monday. Again, lucky.
Wow.
I'm not saying the guy that hired me hasn't even listened to my tape. He read my new script. He read my script.
Oh, really? Yeah, really? Just off the writing sample.
Yeah, Leo McElroy at K-Rock.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he hired me. I was working with Charlie Tuna. I walked in with Charlie Tuna.
Wait a minute. Charlie Tuna?
Yeah.
You work with Art Ferguson.
With Art Ferguson,
I did. That was a radio station.
Oh, yeah.
RLQ at that time.
Charlie and his girlfriends that would come in. And, I've got to have stories about that was during the first Middle East war, and they're in disrobing, and I'm talking about the war between Egypt and Israel. You know. I did my first newscast, and I was trying out Steve Lundy.
Afternoon
guy. And I did the first newscast, and the red phone rings, and everybody had bat phones in. And it's Leo, and Leo says, "Hey, kid." And I said, "Hi, boss." He said, "You sound great." He said, "I didn't think actually you're going to sound that good." And I said, "What are you talking about, Leo? What?" And I said, "I sent you a tape." And he said, "I never listened to the tape." He said, "Your script was pretty good."
Wow.
He said, "I, you know, I could have fired you after the first newscast."
Wow. So,
of course, that's
that was the first time he'd heard you.
That's the way. Yeah, first time he heard me was on the air. That was an incredible radio station. They blew all their money on some kind of all-star concert right before I got there, and there was no money. And we were standing in line at the end, picking up our paychecks at the bank and hoping that they would cash it.
Get the check and run over and cash it real quick.
Yeah. But, you know, the newscasts were, I forgot exactly what the parameters were, but no less than a minute and no longer than 8 minutes on a rock and roll radio station. And the only directive was that you had better explain why you'd done that story, because it was good, and you'd better explain if you ran short why you didn't do a story that was out there. Leo was amazing, and that's I think I cut a lot of my news teeth there. And then while I was during that whole thing, I worked for him, and he let me work. I did a thing at KMPC. And then I ended up at KISS down there for a while.
Wow.
Yeah, I've worked now on two frequencies that Ryan Seacrest is on.
That's my, good for you.
Yeah, I feel
so
real proud of that.
So have a lot of people who no longer work at station Ryan Seacrest now. Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, yeah, Ryan. but
God bless you, Ryan.
Yeah, we had, but that KISS was a good radio station, KMPC. One KMPC story?
Please.
I'm sorry. Are we supposed to be talking about the Bay Area?
Do you have any? No, we're supposed to be talking about you, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Do you have any KMPC stories, by the way?
Yes,
later
yes,
on,
Dave.
We'll cut
yes.
it and move it over.
Yes, David. Yes, David, I do.
Thank you, Mr. Baxter.
I showed up. They did a Christmas parade on the day, I think, after Thanksgiving down there, Friday night. And they called the news director. Called me at six. Well, he called me to do Roger Carroll's shift. I don't know that name. 6:30 to 9. So I do 6. I'm on KMPC. I grew up listening to KMPC. This is amazing. So I do the 6:30 to 9, and I am so nervous. I mean, I was just there was a puddle on the floor after you know. And about 9:05, the news is finishing, and they're yelling at me, Eddie. And I said, "What? Clark Race hasn't shown up." The 9 to 1 guy, whatever. So I go, I'll do that. So I do the 9, and Clark isn't there at 10, isn't there at 11, isn't there at 12. 1 o'clock, Eddie, and they move studios. Everybody had their own studio, right? And their own engineer. These are the golden years of broadcasting. And same thing with KSFO up here. They were doing the same thing, Golden West. Sonny Belanger hadn't shown up to do the all-night show. I was on from 6:30 until Whitting Hill came in at 6 o'clock.
Wow, ran the board all the way through.
It was
amazing.
I was in heaven. They said, "You must have been tired." I said, "No, man, that was just sheer adrenaline." It went the whole thing.
KMBC was still the big Golden West radio station, Autry station
down there at that tunnel,
Patterson station down there today. Essentially KSFO with KNBR signal in the in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and they had Portland and Seattle where the other. So yeah, I mean, so I did that, and I did hopped around a little bit, and Leo let me do that. He was working at K Rock, and I used a different name a couple of times, so L.A.
What different
and that,
names did you use? I'm not deposing you for
my middle name, Eddie Baldwin.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And I was Eddie. Well, I got hired out of a guy named Ron Jacobs,
who
was.
Who the guy?
He was an interesting case.
He was
all the time a genius and the biggest pain in the ass you ever seen in your life. He just he had these ideas that it was like you're watching Albert Einstein.
Absolutely.
Just kind of foamed at the mouth. Mm-hmm. And he was a guy, though, that came to me and said, in management, he did this, and Mickey Luckoff did the same thing later on. The only two managers in my life. He said, "You're working pretty hard, Eddie." He said, "You surf, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Okay." And Jacob said this big, deep voice. I can't even do it. He brought me a surfboard. He said, "You need a hobby. Go surf."
Wow.
Mickey Luckoff did that to me up here.
Mickey brought you a surfboard?
Not a surfboard.
We'll cut that one out in post. We'll cut that one out in post.
Mickey called me into the office when I first came to KGO. Should I finish the... San Diego,
jump.
Went down there, went to the all-new station, KSDO. He wouldn't let me be Eddie Baxter. I'd been Eddie Baxter the whole time, and he said, "A newsman can't be Ed Baxter." And so I said, "Okay, fine."
I see how that would work.
Yeah, Eddie Baxter. I mean, it just... So I went there as middays and the business reporter, and went to mornings, and Jerry Johnson, who was then the ops director at KGO, heard me down there doing some music stuff and mixing some stuff that I had done at K-Rock and just trying to make newscasts more interesting on a rock and roll radio station. And they wanted to do that on KGO. They thought they had a pretty boring radio station and they wanted to...
Really?
Yeah, and they wanted to hear do that. So they hired me up here. So I worked, and when I got up here, I was a Morning Streets reporter, Dunbar and Wygant. Anchoring, I was what they call the Morning Streets reporter, and
is that like position one among reporters?
Well,
is that your beat?
It's your beat. It's a morning drive. I wouldn't call it number one,
right.
but it was live reports every half hour. You had to be where it is. They still have that at KGO, mm-hmm. Ron Castile was doing the noon show, and Ron had some health problems. He'd been in a head-on the Golden Gate, and half the time he showed up, and I would end up working the noon show. And then Harv Morgan, who was doing afternoons, had some health problems. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, there were a lot of days that I went in there at 4:30 and got off at 6. The afternoons was 4 to 6 at that time. And so I'd work a lot of shift. And Mickey called me down over in Golden Gate in the Tenderloin.
Beautiful Golden Gate.
Golden Gate. You walk over people and whatever they left behind, to get to work.
Great neighborhood.
Yeah, it was wonderful. But you know what? It was, with KGO... It fit the personality of what we were trying to do. It seriously did, mm-hmm. because we wanted, when we were building KGO from being number five in the market or whatever mm-hmm. it was to being number one, we wanted a funky radio station. Mm-hmm. We wanted people. We wanted tapestry. We wanted people who really sounded like something.
Sure.
Something. We wanted people. And that's what their management wanted people. I wasn't part of the engineering.
But you had City Hall on one side, and you had everything, the police department,
yeah,
everything
oh,
else
good,
you
yeah.
had in the other direction.
Yeah.
You had the Tenderloin right
yeah.
there. And
oh, yeah.
Else.
No, but anyway, the fabric. But Mickey calls me in the office, and he says, "You've been working pretty hard." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Here's a gift certificate to Ritz Camera. I understand that you one of the things that you said..." And I'd said it somewhere, and I don't remember even who caught it, was photography. I'd been doing all kinds of the oratory and debate and radio and everything through, and I wanted photography. He bought me a camera, tripod, did the whole thing. He said, same thing Ron did, "You need a hobby."
Wow.
And this is that's when I fell in love with Mickey Luckoff, because the guy, Mickey, very stern businessman, mm-hmm. love a radio station, mm-hmm. very tough, but incredibly inside, and he'll probably hate me for saying it, but marshmallowy, mellowy, family, very loving to the people. It's almost like the family, right? I mean, if you're loyal to him, he's loyal to you. He takes care of you, and he does. He's taking care of the people that he thought wanted to be there for his entire tenure.
Which seems to be a common thread that I hear from a lot of people.
He does.
You read it in print and you hear it behind the scenes and
Absolutely.
Everything else. And we've sat at the different events before where he's been there, and it's not one of those things where they're only going to say it to his face, more behind his back, but just an absolutely sterling reputation among the people who work for him.
Well, we talked. Mickey instilled in the people who were successful at KGO that. This is not a job, just a job. Yeah, you get a paycheck. Mm-hmm. And there are places that can say this, and I'm not saying anything about anybody else. But one of the reasons that KGO was, and I think I can say it, probably the most successful radio station in the history of radio. The Bay Area has had, we haven't talked much about the Bay Area. the incredible radio stations that I would get tapes. I begged my friends up here to send me tapes at KSFO and KNBR and KYA and KFRC. Great radio up here. I mean, California had two just incredible radio markets when I was growing up. This thing, but Mickey, so great radio station. So I'm not diminishing what anybody else did. But I spent 35 years at KGO. What Mickey let people know was this: if this was ever just a job to you, and you're ever just doing it for a paycheck, I'll pay you off and get your butt out of here. The people and the passion and the people that care and the egos all made that a part of what made KGO successful. And Mickey had to at some times bring people back in, but not. And that was the KGO people. When you go through the Dunbars and Wygants and Owen Spann and Ron Owens and, my God, Art Finley, who I'm going to leave people out.
Those guys, Eason, and whether, Eason, Tally Farrow, and all those different guys. Mm-hmm. Even go back to Bob Treber and guys like that who
absolutely
were there at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And Harv Morgan, you mentioned.
Harv Morgan,
too.
Everybody cared.
Right.
And, I mean, we'd fight like cats and dogs. Because everybody cared. And if you didn't care, your butt was going to get drummed out of there. He would get rid of you real fast.
I went to California Public School, so my math is really bad. When you started at KGO, Mickey was running the operation
at that time. He had been general manager for a year or 2 years.
Okay,
When I really wanted to get to him, I would say, Mickey, it took you 4 years to become number one. It took me 6 months. he didn't like that at all.
What got you in the door at KGO?
Jerry actually called me. He heard me do a music piece on a female bullfighter.
Okay.
And I really got to spend some time doing some really nice stuff at KSDO. And I worked morning drive, and then I got off and I put together production pieces and a piece every Friday that ran called Offbeat, which I got from If You Turn It Around. It was just the week's bottom stories.
Uh-huh.
And so we
great idea.
Please don't give that to somebody. I may go back and do that now.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, I could syndicate that, couldn't I?
Yeah.
The week's bottom stories. And so Jerry heard that stuff, and he brought me up, and he said, "Can you do that up here?" And I said, "I don't know. I mean, I think so. I what are your union policies?" "Well, that's the problem. We'll have to work through that." And that was the problem with KGO. When I first came up here, you could not be in the field and use any kind of sound. You could be on a telephone, but you could not without having a producer and an engineer with you.
With you at the time. So does that explain why in that era we have a lot of telephone reports and things
just
to save money on having to send out two union guys at the same time?
Yeah, you could do a voicer from out there.
If
you wanted sound with it. So what happened when I came up to KGO, what was happening was the reporters, really good reporters, Jan Black, on the staff, Ron Nasso, on the staff. I think that was it. of the reporters. I mean, it was a small staff, but we would knock each other, getting out the door, we'd knock each other down trying to get to a story.
Wow.
Seriously. Nasso and I had some real,
sure,
knockdown dragouts,
sure,
because we wanted to cover the story.
Just competing with the guys over at KCBS.
They had a huge staff, and we got it done. But Jerry brought me in because he wanted me to do, those guys were doing really good hard news. He wanted me to do some softer kinds of things. And it was a struggle. They still tell me I hold the record for most arbitrations, NABIT arbitrations.
really?
My favorite story, I love the guy. He was an ornery guy. His name was Bud Stewart, engineer. Really a good engineer. In the middle of the day, you'd hear him when Bud had had enough, and he'd just fire up, "Take this job and shove it," and just go all over the radio station. He was just an ornery guy. And I had some story that Jerry had told me, "Okay, you've been here for a month now, and I haven't heard the music. I brought you up here to do music. to put music with this. We got to soup this thing up a little bit. And so I put this production together and the whole thing. And Bud looked at me and he said, I'll clean it up. You can't do that. And I said, yeah, we're going to do it. I said, Bud, you and I, we haven't known each other very long, but file a grievance, my management orders. And he said, okay. So at that time, the engineers could only do one thing at a time. If they were editing a story with a reporter and a call came in that a reporter wanted to record, mm-hmm. they had to stop the editing. You could only do one thing at a time. Wow. The engineers did everything. In any case, Bud, we spent probably 2 hours with people waiting for me to do this management-ordered production piece. He puts it on cart, and he takes the tape reel, and he says, we don't need this anymore. He takes it, erases it, and he says, you like this, don't you? And I said, yeah. I said, we're going to do it. And I said, I expect you to file a grievance, and we'll work this out. We'll let them work it out. I don't want to get it. And he said, okay, here. Bam! Throws it on the floor. The cart goes everywhere. Never got on the air.
Out.
Never got on the air. And they filed a grievance.
Wow.
We won the grievance. And wow. So the music pieces went on the air after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would pretty much define ornery. Yeah.
That's ornery.
That is
ornery. That's a hell of a union contract, too.
Well, he just dropped it.
Yeah. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
He just, oh, geez, I dropped it and stepped on it, and the elephants coming through the room didn't help.
You know? What happened the next week? Or the next time?
Well, they Jerry came up and stood and made sure that everything was okay.
Okay.
So it was, you know, that was a process, and Jerry really had a vision in mind for what KGO was going to become, and that's the way that started. So anyway, along with a bunch of crazy people. I mean just crazy passionate people. Prop 13 set KGO up really big time. Span and Eason jumped on that one. And it caught
cannon fodder.
Yeah, it was great for talk. Mm-hmm. The news operation opened up a little bit. They went to dual anchors in the afternoon, and Dunbar and Wygant caught fire. Mm-hmm. I like to go back and think that I was part of it, and this is very egotistical, I know. I don't think they're, well, I won't be now because of the state of the industry and what everything it's gone through, but the Dunbar Wygant in the morning and Ed and Rosie in the afternoon was just, I think, and as I said, it's egotistical, just very, very hot.
Pretty solid bookends, one way or the other. And then you had everybody else who was on. I mean, you're pretty much an all-star team, top to bottom, 24
absolutely.
Hours a day, seven
absolutely.
Days a week.
Absolutely. And Jim and Ted, absolutely, they had their battles. I mean, but on the air, you would never know it. And they're just crazy. I mean, Dunbar, brilliant. Wygant, brilliant, and the hardest worker I've ever seen in this business. He could see his blood pressure go up and working on stuff. He was just an amazing guy. And then Rosie's still one of my best friends. She is an absolutely amazing
person.
How
did you become tag team partners?
She came in and was working freelance, and I had had knee surgery. And Jan Black was my partner at that time, and Jan was having contract problems. And I went in for surgery, and I got a call from a news director named Bruce Kamen. And Bruce said to me, Eddie, and I said, yeah, he said, you may not be working with Jan much longer. And I said, what's going on, man? And he said, you've been working with two replacements. You've been working with Abby Goldman and with Rosie Allen. And you haven't worked with Rosie Allen. But I'd like to hear you with Rosie Allen. I said, wait a minute. I got this knee surgery thing. He said, noon show Friday. And I said, no, doctor won't clear me. Noon show Friday. So I go in, and I am in pain. We did the noon show, which had Paul Harvey at the end of it, so it was a 45-minute show. And I walk out, and I go home, and he called me on Saturday, and he said, so who'd you like better? You like Abby better, or you like Rosie better? I said, two different kinds of shows. I said, Abby is a consummate professional. You're going to get a news show. It's going to flow. It's going to be up and down. And I said, Rosie is Rosie. Mm-hmm. She's brilliant, She's off the wall. She's, okay, good. And I said, what's going on? And he said, well, that's contract stuff. I can't talk about other people's stuff. And he said, but you're in on Monday, right? And I said, yeah, I came in on Monday. And he says, wrote it. He called us in. We're the team. Wow. So, and he said, and Bruce said, Bruce's comment was, he said, I just heard your voices together, and in your first broadcast, I heard mutual respect. Mm-hmm. And he said, I knew that we could take something, you know. Mm-hmm. And boy, we, Rosie and I, over the years, said some stuff to each other that if you didn't get along, we'd just be,
God. There was a certain chemical mixture there that worked. There was some chemistry that worked in there also.
Well, I mean, you know, when...
Yeah, you can't otherwise.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. When she looks at me, my co-anchor looks at me and says, that was one of the stupidest things I've ever heard anybody say on the radio. And you go, okay, fine. I mean you either go and you try to throw a punch, but she would have taken me out anyway. She would have. I couldn't have stood up with her. She's Army.
She was Army. Yes.
So I couldn't do that. But you know, I mean, some of the stuff that people have saved for me, I wish I had. Some of the things she said to me and I said to her were just
classic.
Can I tell you a Bruce Kamen story?
Absolutely. Do you have any Bruce Kamen stories that you could share with us? Yeah, get that in post. Right?
Well, you got me wound up.
Sorry,
I do love the radio.
No, roll them. How are we doing? Okay, well, just yeah.
Really good. You can edit in?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to do it again and make sure your take was okay?
Ed, do you have any Bruce Kamen stories? How was that? Was that okay? Ed, do you have any Bruce Kamen stories? Let's go with that one.
Let me think.
You're not helping.
Bruce came about 10 minutes before a show at 4 o'clock. He always said he used to like to piss me off because I sounded better on the air. I had more of an edge. So one day he came to me and he said, Ed. I said, yeah, Bruce, what's going on? He said, come here. He calls me in the office and he said, are you alive? I said, what are you talking about? He says, are you on the air? Have you been on the air for the past 2 weeks? I said, Bruce, where the is this going? And he said, and this is before email, haven't got a phone call good or bad. Haven't got any letters good or bad. He said, I don't know whether anybody's still listening. The ratings are still good, but we don't know anything about that. Nobody's be able to figure that out. He said, I've got nobody called to say that you suck. There's nothing going on. He said, are you still around? I said, what do you want from me? And he said, I just want you to show me that there's somebody out there. And I was PO'd. I walk out and I said to Rosie, I said, we had the gossip file at the bottom.
Of course.
I said, the gossip file is going to be, well, it was the most raw. It was that close to getting us shut down. Halfway through, he comes running the door, and Bruce had this red hair and light complexion, and he's just red. He's going, okay, that's it, that's all. Stop, you know, and he can't say anything. Oh, he lit up. And all of a sudden, I see Mickey come down.
It's alive.
Jack Swanson, and everybody. They're all standing there. And I go, oh, that was my last show. That's okay, that's fine. And so I got off the air, and Bruce used to go over to Grumpy's, which is right across the street on Front Street, and he would partake in happy hour and come back when the show was over. And he came back, Eddie, come in the office. And I said, okay. And he said, okay, you proved your point. I said, you challenged me. He said, I'm going to tell you this just once. I said, okay, he hadn't been there very long. He said, I will allow you to be good. I will allow you to be bad. But I will never allow you to be boring.
Very good.
I went,
perfect.
Cool.
There you go.
The whole theory on KGO, and if somebody asked me to sum it up one point, what did you do differently than any other people? And it was, I have had a bunch of news directors over the years tell me, at one point or the other, before when they just came into KGO and didn't learn it. Mickey said to me not long ago, he says, how many news directors did you train? I said, no, I didn't train anybody. But it was, you know, they come in and they're at places where they're telling, oh, God, don't make a mistake. Oh, no, don't read wrong. Oh, no, don't do that. And don't do anything that can make anybody tune out. And during the really good days at KGO, we were always not worried about making people tune out, because there was always going to be somebody who hated you, always somebody who didn't like what you did, but we spent our time figuring out what would make people tune in. And the great Sherwood did that. You want to make people tune in. Mm-hmm. That's what we tried to do. That's some of the shrink wrap that's going on with the industry now, is that they're so afraid to say, oh, I'm going to do something that's going to make somebody turn the channel or right. turn the radio off, right. that they're not doing anything to make people turn the radio on.
Exactly.
And so that's what KGO did, and that's where Bruce was, and John McConnell. I can't mention all the names. Incredible management through the years. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mickey had a way of picking people and let them go. There were a couple of ding dongs, and along the path of life, but
you overall, know, so of the New overall. York Yankees, you know, every once
yeah.
in a while, there's
oh yeah,
a, there's
but
a
but
the, in there.
And just you know, the amazing and the attitude, Art Finley. Art Finley, one of my favorite meetings of all time at KGO was with the attorneys, the ABC attorneys. So this goes back a long, long way. And they were trying to tell us about payola and what we could do and what we could accept and what we could endorse and those kinds of things. And it got a little bit ridiculous. And Art went, "This is BS." And we all got free magazines. I mean, you know, we got Time Magazine, we got Newsweek Magazine. You know, no mm-hmm. big deal. I mean, mm-hmm. what are we going to do? Yeah, Time Magazine says nobody did it for any money or there was no, you know,
that's news
payoff.
Payola.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, they made access to the magazines. And Art said, he was searching for something, and he's looking at these attorneys, and he says, finally, he said, "So, we all get free magazines. Can we get?" I went, "Art, yeah, I just thought this." Well, we got, and the attorneys didn't want to make this into an issue. So, and he said, no, I'm serious. If we can't accept anything like this, over $25 or a year, now, you know, these subscriptions are what, you know, at that time, a dollar a piece or whatever like this. I get, you know, more than 25 of them. All right, you know, can we get that?" And the attorney says, "Mr. Finley," and he says, no, seriously, I want you to tell me." And he said, "Okay, no more magazines." Boom. We lost our magazines.
Makes a lot.
We couldn't get magazines. But that mentality, that Art Finley, that just mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. you know, pit bull, mm-hmm. you know, I'm okay, all right, butthead, what are you saying? What do you want?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, are you really going to be this ridiculous?
Quick aside, I've had one phone conversation with Art up in British Columbia, one phone call with him, and it was just a simple conversation, and I never felt more challenged in my life.
Oh yeah,
I have never. Yeah. I fully expected him to say line 3 from Hayward after me, you know. It was like I, after I hung up the phone, I leaned back and just went, wow, that didn't go the way I wanted to. It wasn't that it was bad. It was just, I was on the spot the entire time.
He still emails oh. the folks at KGO.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. And he would email me no more than 2 months ago and say, "Why did you say that? Hmm. What was that?" Hmm. You know, if you dug deeper, it would be, you know, just the brain, you know, and I mean, you know, the talent there. I mean, Ron Owens.
But you had basically an entire lineup of Jim Eason's and a Lee Rogers at mm-hmm. one point. Mm-hmm. You know, all the mm-hmm. different guys. Coughlin, even
yeah,
at the time.
I met,
you know,
yeah,
all
I
those
met,
guys.
Yeah,
Ron Owens, you know.
Yeah, Russ came back after being general manager in New York. Mickey hired him back. He was a general manager of television, mm-hmm. of Channel yeah. 7. And he went back to New York as a corporate mm-hmm. Type, and he didn't want to do that. And Mickey hired him back as a talk show host. And Russ was a Mission District street fighter, and one of the nicest, tough guy, but one of the most genuine people you ever want to meet. Mm-hmm. But you know, you look at Ron Owens. Ron Owens has cut a swath where radio, from Limbaugh through these guys. Who pretend to be conservative talk show hosts to make money, you know, they, and
I'm back.
Excuse
me.
Yes, and have been very successful.
Sure.
Ron tries to look at both sides of things, mm-hmm. And KGO, did that stuff. You can fire people up. I mean, mm-hmm. the churn and talk, that you can do that. Eason was just, churns are supposed to be like, churn is at the top of a talk show. Mm-hmm. You churn it up and try to get phone calls. Without phone calls, you're pretty well dead. Eason would sometimes, they would tell him, they send out a memo that would be a reminder. Churns should run no more than 7 minutes, and we should get to the first cluster at 11 past the hour. The next week, Jim would run 25-minute churns.
Just
get everything backed up. Just to PO management. And they put out memos saying, we need to run through more phone calls. Our phone calls are getting pretty long, so we're going to start running a timer in there. And they put a timer in there that would count down, and then these lights would come on. It was like you were like
Christmas
in an ambulance. Yeah. Yeah, and Jim, and so Jim would start running, 10, 12-minute phone calls.
Well, I don't want to go off tangents, but I think one of my favorite KGO stories was when Coughlin was on the air on the night that John Lennon was murdered. Mm-hmm. And the story was... Gary Morris said he was listening, to KGO, and here's Coughlin railing about John Lennon, pothead, anti-American. How'd they let this guy into this country? They should have thrown him out years ago. This convicted pothead and everything else. Gary said he called and said, "Ross, seriously, I thought you liked the beat." He goes, "Trying to get some goddamn phone calls." and that's the bottom line. Move that dial, get that, agitate people and mm-hmm. do that. Mm-hmm. But enough about him. Let's talk about you some more. Afternoons and then moving into a slightly different position.
Mornings, yeah.
Station, yeah.
Yeah, that was, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to work mornings.
Because you loved Rosie in the afternoon? I loved not getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning?
A combination of things. Uh-huh. I did love working with Rosie. They couldn't talk Rosie into going to mornings, and Ted was there anyway, and
sure.
So leaving Rosie, a definite concern, getting up early, an even more definite concern, and over the years, that was very, very, very tough. I hated it. I'm not a morning person.
You living over in the East Bay.
I hated it. I live in the East Bay. Yeah, I still do. Yeah. And that, getting up at 3:30, I mean, my normal pattern for my whole life until I went in mornings in 2000 is I go to bed at 12:30 or 1 o'clock. I was meeting my butt coming, out the door. I mean, if I wanted to see my wife, so that was horrible. Mm. The next thing was probably a little selfish. The saying is, you don't replace the legend; you replace the replacement of the legend.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dunbar's shadow and footprint in the Bay Area, it was just so
and broadcasting
huge.
In general,
And the first, I don't think it was email at that time, even letter or phone call or whatever I got was Mr. Baxter, you're no Dunbar. And I went, see? So, I mean, but the thing that, and I said no, this is the best negotiation I ever did with Mickey Lukoff. And Mickey's just a son of a gun to negotiate with. The best negotiator, I said no, no, no. And every time I said no, the price went up. It was cool. I mean, I don't know why I'd been so stupid all those years, And the price went up. And he finally said to me, "You're doing it or you're going to do nothing." And I said, then fine. I don't want to work mornings. And so they came to me, and management came to me and said, "Look," and Wygant was sitting in the room. And Ted, in the news director's room, and Ted looked at me and he said, "I've been working with you since you were a kid out of San Diego coming in here. You have extraordinary talent. Jim's retiring, and there is nobody in the world with whom I'd rather work." I'm going, Ted Wygant. I mean, I idolize Ted. Ted's work ethic,
right.
His sense of timing, his mm-hmm. voice, his
sense of humor, everything. Yeah.
And I went, oh. Yeah. And looked at the news director and I said, "You son of a bitch. You're not playing fair at all here." And Ted said, "No, I'm looking forward very much to working with you." And I said, "How long, do you have? How long do I have? What are we talking about?" Ted said, "Well, my plan is to work 3 more years." And I said, I'll sign a 3-year deal. And they said, okay, signed a 3-year deal. And the time came up, and I was going to leave. I didn't like, Ted said to me after he had left, he said, you were angry. And he said, you're a nice guy, but he said, you came in every morning, you threw trash cans around, and you do. I said, I did what? I didn't do that. He said, yes, you did. He said, you hated being there, didn't you? And I said, yeah. I said, but I didn't throw trash cans around. And he said, yes, you did.
Wow.
So, and he said, I didn't say anything to you about it. So obviously, you know, I mean, I was getting ready to go, and somebody moved a trash can, and I was a trash can thrower. But the
semantics, like you say, potato.
So the thing comes up, and he's going to retire, and they say, well, you know, we can't let both of you go at the same time. And I said, I went back on afternoons. I'm back on afternoons. And they said, well, we can't do that one. So I walk into the office. There's Ted sitting there. Ted, you know, the legacy of them. And I said, you son of a... what is this? You know, one time, you know, two
times.
Shame
time, on me,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And they got me for 2 more years. Wow. And then, so... I was supposed to be through in 2005, and then they...
You weren't wearing your sweatshirt from Sucker University or anything. I was walking in. It's no, like, hey, I've been here before on this one.
And having said that, David, morning drive at KGO. Kid wanted to work radio since he was 11. I fall into this thing, and they're stupid enough to keep paying me a good deal of money to work morning drive at KGO. So 2011, I'm still, you know, I'm still there.
We've got time, right? We still got some time. Do you still have some time?
Yeah.
We have a little over 10 minutes.
That's, if you don't mind.
No, sure.
I'll stay with you for just a few more minutes.
Sure. No, I'm enjoying this. I love sitting in the studio.
Was there anything in particular over those 35 years? Was there one moment that really stood out where it was... where it just stays with you, where you say, man, this is just a great, great moment. I mean, whether it was something wonderful or something horrible, whether it was the, you know, the Moscone milk, or whether it was something great that happened, that you personally felt like, you know, that it was just a great moment, that was a moment.
It was probably a series of moments, and it surrounded the Jim Jones, the guy.
That was a hell of a period of a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I actually was the East Bay Bureau Chief for a couple of weeks, and I was working on it, and I got calls from people who said that Jim Jones and the People's Temple were taking their family members out, and they were going to some place called Guyana, and I looked that up, and where is it? And it was called Guyana. They're saying Guyana, and I had no idea what it was, and I actually had gone to the People's Temple and gone and watched Jim Jones in action, watched him perform his cancer things where he pulled a calf liver out, you know, from these people, and gone back with in the back where there were people guarding a room in the back that I never got into with guns. And I'm thinking, this is pretty weird for, you know. And I was able to start piecing together, working on it like part-time, you know, the connection between Joe Freitas, who was a district attorney, and George Moscone. And none of these people did anything wrong.
Right.
But Jim Jones...
Was Congressman Ryan involved in Jackie Speer and those? Were they involved at that point?
I mean, yes.
Yes. Wow.
And I became very close with Jackie after what happened in Guyana, where the congressman was killed and she was wounded. Mm-hmm. And we talked a lot about it and did a lot of retrospective stuff, but Jim Jones played the political game amazingly well. And there was a saying that you couldn't win a political, you couldn't win a race without his support. And the People's Temple members were out on the street, and he cult. Everybody knows what happened to them.
Sure.
They would do whatever he wanted. I was working on that, and I got a call that something was going to go down, and there was the Freedom Religious Center in Berkeley or something, where a number of the family members had gathered, and there was something big going on, and that I should go there, and that they would let me in. And I went over there, and it was they had a ham radio set up that was live transmission to Guyana. And I was in the room when the guy actually started, he's saying, something is terrible. His head, you could hear screams and you could hear stuff. And that's when the homicide was going on. So I covered that, and then I covered the aftermath. I didn't go to Guyana. They felt it was pretty dangerous, but then we got word about Congressman Ryan, and I felt real guilty about that for a while because I had been getting these calls, and we were wired in, and I had talked with Joe Freitas, the district attorney at the time, and Moscone really wasn't involved in it because he was, you know, I mean he was collecting votes, and. So being there for that time and being in there, they locked it down. They wouldn't let us out because there were a number of family members. And I could remember looking outside the windows and seeing armed snipers and police because there are all kinds of rumors. We don't think Jim Jones is among those who are dead. The guy still doing the ham radio thing. We don't think Jim Jones is among the dead. We think he's out there. So that was where he was coming back to get these other family members. And these people were just scared to death. So that was the most horrific thing. And then you couple that with the City Hall shootings.
Right about the same time, the Dan which, White yeah. timeline and the Jones timeline.
Yeah, they were kind of month. I should remember my yeah. history. They were about a month apart.
Yeah, but there were parallel and, aspects mm-hmm. of the stories were going along.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And that happened. I was still in Contra Costa County and on the day of the City Hall murders, and they dispatched me to, I was anchoring at that time, but they dispatched me to the Hall of Justice. And I was there when Dan White was brought in. And I remember the feeling, just the you know.
You weren't there when Dianne Feinstein made the announcement. Was Peter Cleveland there at that time? Was Peter there or somebody else from KGI?
I think Peter was there. Wow. But that was where. I have a Peter Cleveland story for you. You want a Peter Cleveland story?
Any chance you might have a Peter Cleveland story for us?
And Al Bullock.
Oh, okay.
And Al Bullock, and Al Bullock story.
Oh, they're rolled into each other?
Yeah.
Oh, this is...
I hadn't met a KGO very long.
This is going to cut into my my ping pong story time, but if you...
I had double hernia surgery, and I'd just come back to work. And I was coming in, and on our scanners, we were real, you know, and the cap backwards, and we were real news reporters, and the scanners and all that. Now, Peter and Al, Peter was tied in more than any reporter I've ever known in my life to the police. I mean, you know, I mean, I wondered whether he had, you know, whether he, well, he was out drinking with them. But anyway, that's another story. He knew everything. And I hear this information going down in the Western edition. I have no clue what's going on. And Peter's working for Channel 7 at that time. And I drive up and I hear this deep voice and coming through my Channel 2, which is the TV channel. Ed, don't drive through that area again. And I said, Peter? He said, yes. He said, go to, and I've forgotten the coordinates of the street he gave me. And he said, and I'll tip you off. When something's going down, something big's going down, but you were in danger, don't drive through there again. I said, okay, fine. So I go and park at this thing, and I hear nothing, and all of a sudden I hear this boom, bang, gunshots, what I thought was tear gas, and I'm stupid. I go pick up my little tape, my Sony tape deck, and I go running as fast as my plump little legs will carry me, and I'm all of a sudden in the square. And I hear from the left somebody say, what the are you doing here? Hit the deck. And I go down on my double hernia surgery. Mm. I look back, police line. They're firing tear gas up into this apartment complex. And guy comes out, pulls me back behind the police lines. That's the stupidest thing. And I said, I just ran into it. And Peter walks over to me and he says, nice work, kid. Told you to stay put. I said, you never tipped me off. He said, just about got yourself killed.
It's terrific.
It's Peter. I mean, that's just, isn't that Cleveland?
Peter. Yeah, that is perfect.
That is
Do we have any time? 5 minutes?
Okay.
So, The knees are the knee is back at 100%.
The knee is I would call it 100%. I'll take 92.
92 ain't bad.
Yeah, I'm not in pain. Not in pain every day. I walk. Every other step was painful until I got a replacement 10 months ago now. So.
And the little white ball you hit is not a golf ball. And,
it's orange.
It's oh, they're using orange now?
Yes, orange.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Rewind that for a second. And you're back to hitting the little orange ball.
Ball.
Thank you.
And yes, yes.
Bails him out, yeah. Yeah, I thought the 1958 FM was going to be my high point of the story today.
1958 high.
Yeah, putting you in an FM station, thinking the Lakers owners owned it.
Was 1967.
I know it was now. Like catching a guy unprepared, huh?
No, you're doing a great job.
You're doing a great job.
What do you want to know?
You're playing competitive.
I'm playing competitive ping pong. Don't
ping
laugh.
Pong.
No laughing.
I'm not.
You can't laugh.
No,
ping-pong.
That's
it's a rigorous sport.
Tell me about it.
I lost weight doing that. Yeah, it's a great sport. It's chess and tennis and everything rolled into one. I've never played a sport like ping pong. It's all spin. It's all I've had a ball doing it. It's really a great sport. 7 years now, I think. I had to give up because of my knee. I had to give up tennis. And now I could go back. I think, but the doctor cleared me to play tennis. I don't want to. Ping pong is just wonderful. My only problem with it is that I can't. It's an Asian Chinese dominated sports, and they coach these 12-year-old kids that beat my ass out there, and I can't understand what they're saying. It's really frustrating. Nobody can coach me because the referees umpires
understand. Yeah. Yeah.
But the dads sit there with these little kids. And they're just wiping me up with the floor, So other than that, it's fine.
You need to take up a second or third language. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
but you play at a fairly high competitive level.
I did before my surgery. I'm hoping to get back there. Yeah, I actually qualified. Now I actually qualified to go to the U.S. Open. You don't. It's not like tennis U.S. Open. I'm not a world champion. Mm-hmm. They have rating levels. Mm-hmm. I'm about in the mid range somewhere. I'm not super good. I'm not super bad. I can play a pretty good level of game. I just need to figure out how not let the little kids pass me up. Junior will I'll beat him up, and then he'll go away for the summer and come back and he's about a foot taller and kicks my butt.
And a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
Less than 2 minutes, I understand from our staff. What are you doing radio-wise, broadcasting-wise, media-wise, anything at all?
What am I? I'm trying to figure out what to do when I grow up.
When you grow up.
Let me tell you. The ride at Key, I feel blessed. And I hope you don't mind me getting a little maudlin for a second. I feel blessed. I worked at arguably the best radio station, and certainly over the longest period of time, the great radio stations in the Bay Area. The history that we have here in this market is just incredible. I don't think people someday, even young people, will go back to, and that's what this is about here. This is what the Hall of Fame does. This is, is to show people what radio is about. The tradition is just so rich. The talent's so rich. And I did 35 years at arguably for the longest period of time the best radio station in the country, and I was in the right place, as my daddy said, the opportunity at the right place at the right time, and they were stupid enough to pay me for that long time, and we did more stuff and made more of a contribution to this community. And ultimately, and this is going to really sound bad, when the paychecks are done and when you see your name up on a wall in the Hall of Fame, which by the way, thank you for all the work that you do. It is absolutely, it's a great feeling. When all is said and done, what radio should do is serve the community. KGO did that in a multitude of ways, and I hope to God the industry can get back to a place where it realizes that's why the business exists, is we serve. We serve first, and I hope that can be. And my time is just, man, what a lucky dude.
Fantastic. Wow. Easiest interview I ever did.
Well, thank you so much, Dave.
That was terrific.
My wife says to me, you know, you asked me what I was going to do. She said, I said, I think I'll be a greeter at Walmart. And she said, no, folks will never get by the front. Nobody won't, they won't be able to go in to get in to spend their money.
Oh, that was really, I really appreciate it.